Hello, welcome to the Lean of Plants podcast. My name is Chelsea, and if you are struggling to lose weight on a plant-based diet, then this podcast is for you. While there are thousands of books, podcasts, and resources about the benefits of a plant-based diet, the reality is that being vegan does not guarantee losing weight. If you are feeling frustrated and confused about where to start, or you know exactly what you should be doing, but you just can't seem to rustle up enough willpower to do it, then keep listening. In this podcast, you'll learn the truth about plant-based weight loss, but just as importantly, how to use proven methods of behavioral change to turn what you know into lifelong habits that lead to getting and staying lean. Can't wait to get started. Let's do this. Have you ever been in a room with a group of women talking about diets? Everyone's going around saying what they've tried before, why it's harder for them, be that menopause or PCOS or the fact they've got kids now or the things that they can't eat. All the things that they've done and seen done, what's worked, what hasn't, and their struggles around food. I think this is a pretty common occurrence. It's pretty sad most of the time, and I had a phenomenal opportunity recently to be in such a group where people had made pretty darn empowered decisions. In saying that, there was a lot of conversations that came up where there was just fundamental misunderstanding about the mechanisms of weight loss. And what it leads to when we don't understand these things is that we think that we have to follow rules, or we do something for a while, but we don't understand why it works. Or we do something and then it doesn't work and we think that we're broken. Or we do something for a short period of time that has no lasting sustainability and then think that it's our willpower. And the reason that we haven't been successful is that there's something inherently wrong with us, be it in our bodies or be it in our brains. Nothing could be further from the truth. Whoever you are, if you are 60, if you are 70, if you have PCOS, if you have hormonal issues, if you have struggled with many, many diets your entire life, if you are vegan, if you are not, if you are carnivore, no matter who you are, you can lose weight because there are predictable, knowable reasons why fat loss occurs. And there are 10 things that are so vital that you must understand about this in order to make empowered decisions that will make this not only more effective, but also easier as well. So this episode is going to be the one-stop shop of what those 10 commandments are. And my goal for this is that if you have a mother-in-law, if you have a friend, if you yourself are just confused about this topic, or you've heard so many conflicting things, then you can walk away with the clarity that you need to go and start moving towards your goals. So let's dive into it. We have so much ground to cover. Really quickly, before we do that, a little bit about my story. If you're new here, or if someone sent you this, I am a vegan girl, love my veggies, and I've lost 40 pounds on a plant-based diet. But I actually was on a plant-based diet long before I lost those 40 pounds, about 20 kilos. I really struggled with my weight, even eating very healthy for about a decade, and I've been dieting for most of my adult life. I didn't actually start to sustainably lose the weight until I understood these 10 principles, and when I did, it just kept coming off, and I have not found this a struggle since. I've been able to move on with my life. Since that time, we've helped hundreds and hundreds, it's actually really in the thousands now, of women inside of Lean with Plants, my program, lose weight, keep it off, lose anywhere from 10 to 160 pounds, I think is the hugest amount of weight that someone has lost so far. And not only that, there are thousands and thousands of people who have looked at this content, watched this free content, and have been able to make insane changes in their life. I get messages about this every single day. And I'm telling you this not because I want to brag, but because I want to show you that this really, really does work. And contrary to most of the absolute insane BS that there is online, this is so simple that a toddler, well, maybe not a toddler, but at least an 8-year-old, my 8-year-old daughter could understand this. And it is not mystical and magical. Weight loss is knowable, it is predictable, it is so much more simple than we've ever been told. It's just that the simplicity of it does not help someone sell a fitness tea. It doesn't help someone promote their keto book because there's no big broccoli. There's no real reason for this to be common knowledge because it doesn't benefit anyone. And even for myself, it's so unsexy that the only people that really end up wanting to be part of a movement like this are people who are sick of the fads. They're sick of the unsustainableness. And they really just want to get this done. They want to get it over and done with. So if that's you, then please keep listening. I'm going to stop waffling and we're going to get into it. The first thing you need to understand is that all weight loss falls within the bounds of what's called a calorie deficit. A calorie deficit is the only way that any fat loss works. This is not always talked about online. I wish that it was. And like I've said, the reason for this is that it doesn't help someone sell their unique situation or their unique solution, I should say, to a problem. But your body needs energy to function, and that energy comes from the food that you eat. The way that that energy is measured is in calories. So calories are not evil any more than inches or centimeters are evil. They're simply a way of measuring energy input and output. And one of the things that's fascinating to me is that there's been this massive rise in obesity since about the 70s, and the amount of food or the amount of calories that have been produced by the food industry per person since that time is about now 3,900 calories, which is nearly double what most people actually need. And if you look at the correlation of food technology advancing to the point where we can produce so many cheap calories per person, that rise of calorie production directly is related to the rise in average weight gain. Like, how crazy is that? It literally just is calories. And so what happens is when your body takes in more calories than it needs, and it takes in all of this energy, and you can't get, you don't need that. It's like putting more fuel in the car than it needs. Instead of us being like a car though, instead of us just leaking over with that and wasting it, our bodies have this amazing mechanism for storing that extra energy for when it might need it in the future. And that's where we store that as fat. That's our rainy day fund. So if you're overweight right now, it is because at some point you've gotten more energy than your body needs and your body has stored it. And we'll get into the hormones and we'll get into menopause and all the other things that affect this later on. But fundamentally, it is simply a problem of excess. It is a problem of excess calories. And that doesn't mean that you've eaten too much in terms of volume. It doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you morally incompetent. It just means that you've had more calories than you need. Your body is doing what it is designed to do. This is really, really important to understand. And even eating healthy foods, you can get more calories than you need, and you will store those extra calories as extra fat. Storing energy and storing excess calories is a positive thing. It is a positive thing that our bodies have been designed to do. It means that we can survive without having to eat constantly. It means that we can store extra energy for a rainy day. Imagine something like an apocalypse, or imagine a war, or imagine that you are just stuck in your house for a week and you for some reason can't get out. I mean, please, if that's, yeah, maybe not the best thing to actually imagine, but if you had to just constantly have this input-output scenario where if you didn't eat for a day, you would die because you didn't get the energy that you needed, then we'd probably have died out as a species. So we have this as a really, really positive mechanism. And what's happening in this scenario is that your body is doing the best that it possibly can be or can do in an environment of constantly getting more than it needs. Like, give it some credit here. Stop hating on it. If we didn't have this, we'd be dead. The real issue is not that your body is storing excess calories, it's that we're now in an environment that is unprecedented. I cannot stress to you enough that this is such a recent problem to have, similar to something like social media, where we've not had to, we have never had to deal with the effects of something like constantly being stimulated by a tiny computer that sits in the palm of your hand, where you have access to all of the communication on the planet. We haven't had that exact problem or understood all of the negative associations with something like that until very, very recently, within the last 20 years. And it is exactly the same with calories. For all of human history, up until about the 70s, we have struggled as a society to get enough calories. It has been one of the biggest issues that we have faced as a species, is simply getting enough food. Because high calorie food is harder to produce, it takes more effort, it takes more production, it takes more cost, it takes more input. Up until recently, food technology and the evolution of food technology is the main reason that our biggest problem has gone from avoiding starvation to avoiding what used to be the diseases of kings, excess. So your body is not the issue, excess calories are. Calories are not bad, they're simply energy. A calorie surplus causes weight gain. So in order to lose weight, we are going to need to get into what is called that calorie deficit. And so what that means is that because energy can neither be created or destroyed, if you are consuming less calories than you need, then your body has to get that energy and power you from somewhere. I want you to think about this almost like you've got this car and you've got a few liters of extra fuel inside the back of the car or in your boot. You run that car, you run out of fuel, and then your car can't continue to function without that extra fuel. So you go to the back of your car, you get the fuel out of the boot and you put it in your car and your car can run again. And now you've got less fuel or no fuel in the boot. Like, your rainy day fun is gone. Fund is gone. And the reason for that is because you used it up. And it's pretty much the same kind of thing with when it comes to a calorie deficit. You're not getting your fuel that you need on a day-to-day basis to function and power your daily bodily functions. And so your body is then going, well, I'm using this fuel. I'm using a certain amount of calories anyway, I need to get that from somewhere. So it starts taking it from the rainy day fun. And if you've ever heard the phrase fat burning, then this is kind of what most people are referring to. So the goal of any weight loss program, this is really, really important. If you're taking notes or if you're zoning out, I hear you, but the goal for anything, any program, is to just get you into a calorie deficit. You will not burn fat without it. It is impossible. If you've done a keto diet and it worked, it's because the keto diet got you somehow into a calorie deficit. Most likely because you cut, well, always, because you cut calories. Somehow. You didn't mean to do it, but you did. Intermittent fasting. The reason that it works, when it works, is because of a calorie deficit. Cutting out foods. Carnivore. High carb, low fat. Any diet that you conceive of works when it works because of a calorie deficit. Now, here's the part that's really important, is the inverse of this. If you do not get into a calorie deficit by what you are doing, for whatever reason, it does not matter what you are doing, you will not burn fat. You can be in ketosis, and if you are eating the same amount of calories as you need, you will not be in a calorie deficit. If you are massively cutting your portion sizes and you are feeling the incredible pain from doing that every single day, and you think, hey, I'm eating less calories, if you're not actually losing fat consistently, then there is something happening, and we'll talk about what it is a bit later on, but there is something happening where you're not actually in a calorie deficit. And I've heard people come to me and they say, you know what, Charles, I've been in a calorie deficit for months and I haven't lost weight. And the short answer is you have not been in a calorie deficit, because if you were, you will have lost weight. Unless somehow you're just losing massive amounts of muscle and water and maybe, I don't know, whatever else, and it's not showing up on the scales yet and you are actually burning fat behind the scenes, because our bodies are more than just fat. Like, we have muscle in there as well. But if you're not losing, it's because you're not in a calorie deficit. A calorie deficit will result in weight loss 100% of the time. There is no exception of this. even if you have something which we would call metabolic adaptation, which I'm going to link to if you're curious more about that and you've heard things about starvation mode, but we will go into that a little bit. If you're concerned that you've broken your metabolism and that there is some reason that even being in a calorie deficit you won't lose weight, let me assure you that is simply not the case. Keep listening as well, because I am going to expand on this point a little bit later on, but I want to leave that here for now. You must be in a calorie deficit to lose weight. So the goal of all diets is to effectively get you into a calorie deficit for an extended period of time. And here's how to do that. Number two, calorie density is the most important factor when it comes to how to get into a deficit. Calorie density just means the number of calories inside a given weight of food. And there's this whole spectrum of some foods being extremely calorie dense and some foods being extremely calorie dilute. And if you want to think about this in terms of a analogy or an easy way to picture this is think about two jars of money. On one side, you've got a jar of coins and you've got 10 cent pieces and 20 cent pieces. And that jar is super heavy because it's filled to the brim with these low value coins. On the other hand, you've got a jar that has notes in it and it's filled to the brim with $100 notes. And when you look at it and when you touch it and when you weigh it, there's not really much going on because notes don't really weigh all that much. And you look at these two, and if you were to say to a child, choose the one that you want to have, a lot of the time that child is going to pick the coins because it appears to have more value. But when you actually look at these two identical jars of money, one of them has a significantly higher value, one of them has a significantly lower value, even though they're in the same type of jar and they fill the same space. And it's exactly the same with foods. For a pound of food, you can have a variation of 40-fold in terms of how many calories are in that food for exactly the same weight. A pound of broccoli, for example, is about 100 calories, whereas a pound of oil is 4,000 calories. And the biggest reason, if we come back to why we've been gaining weight as a society, is that our foods are just more calorie dense than they ever were before. And we have more access to high calorie dense foods. Coming back to why we've been consistently gaining weight from the 70s, we just have a higher calorie density of food. We have more high calorie foods. We have more access to high calorie foods in terms of calorie density. Because if you were to pick up a potato and you were to eat just a potato, it's really not very many calories. It's maybe like 100, 120 calories for a medium-sized potato. Whereas if you were to drive through McDonald's and you were to get potatoes that are slathered in oil, deep-fried in oil, which is the most calorie-dense food on the planet, then you're going to be eating something which is most likely 800, possibly even more calories, where you're feeling the same level of fullness because the actual volume of food is very, very similar. If you start to shift your diet towards increasing the amount of low-calorie foods that you eat and decreasing the amount of high-calorie foods, then you can predictably get into a calorie deficit because you've now lowered your calories from your own starting point, even if you never find out what that number actually is. This is one of the pitfalls of something like calorie counting, where you think that simply by knowing the amount of calories that you need, you're going to be able to eat in a way where you consistently do stick to that number. What actually happens is we stick to that number for a little bit, we find that really difficult because we're trying to eat the same kinds of foods, but we just have to eat much, much less of them. And then we end up getting hungry, having a binge, having a 5,000 calorie weekend, which is very easy to do with high calorie foods, and then trying to start this whole cycle again because our weekend knocked us out of a calorie deficit. When we understand calorie density, we can work smarter rather than harder. And this was a big change that happened for me, where I used to eat these very high calorie healthy smoothies that would have like 1,000 calories that I would feel very unfull from, unsatisfied. And then I would want to go in eat something else later on. Whereas at the same time, I'd be avoiding things like sweet potato or vegetables because they weren't fully raw or they didn't fit into this kind of rule system that I had for myself. And I would have been so much better off to eat a sweet potato with some black beans and a big filling salad with some broccoli and a low fat dressing that would have massively filled me up than this 1,000-calorie smoothie that then led to a later binge. And I had no concept of that at the time. I had no concept that calories were the most important thing and that I could manipulate the food on my plate to be lower in calories while also feeling full and making me actually enjoy what I was eating without the rules. So I struggled with this for a long time because I didn't understand it. And once I did, I just started to work smarter with my plates. I started to look at what are the things that are lower in calories. And I'm going to give you the cheat sheet for that right now. The biggest influencer of calories in a food in terms of calorie density is going to be water and fiber. Because water and fiber are essentially empty calories. Obviously, water doesn't have any. And fiber is undigestible plant skin or husk or anything that you want to call it. It's the fibers within fruits and vegetables and plant foods that we can't break down in our system. So it adds bulk, it helps to fill up our stomach, but it doesn't add extra calories. And it also has all these other amazing effects in our body which help to lower the calories that we absorb and help us to feel more full. So when you think about foods that are packaged, that have any kind, if they are dry, things like bread, crackers, anything that has had any processing involved in it, something like oil where the fiber and the water is removed, something like sugar where the fiber and the water is removed, a bagel, the fiber and the water is removed. If you think anything like that, it's going to inherently be higher in calorie density. Anything that only requires you to take it from the ground and wash it or peel it or it's edible right then and there, those things are inherently lower in calorie density. Things like vegetables, which are extremely low in calorie density, which really we want to be eating a ton more of for a fat loss phase and just for the amazing micronutrients that they provide as well. Things like fruit, yes, contrary to popular belief, because they are flipping low in calories, they're about 200 calories per pound. Contrast that with something like bread or ice cream, which would be, well, bread's like 1500 calories, ice cream would be like 2000 calories per pound, cheeses and things like that, over 2000 calories per pound. So the amount of calories that you consume from an apple or even a banana is far less from a small piece of cheese, and you're going to be way more full from it because it has much more water and it has much more fiber. Potatoes are super low in calorie density at about 400 calories per pound. And then we have beans and things like whole grains, which are about 500 to 600 calories per pound. And then we've got like avocado starts to go up to about 700. Tofu's about 700 as well. And then we've got nuts and seeds, which are actually very, very high in calories. So we need to eat them in smaller amounts. And it's kind of obvious when you think about them because, yeah, they're high in fiber, but they also just don't have much water. Vegetables are 95% water, which is why they're so low in calories. So if you use that filter and you just ask yourself, is this a water-rich food? Soups, like, they're water-rich, so they typically are really low in calories. Is this a water-rich food? Does it have a ton of fiber in it? If so, I want to eat more of it. If not, I want to eat less. The second influencer of calorie density is macronutrients. And so macronutrients are just your carbohydrates, your protein, and your fats. There's no good or bad, and I'm going to talk about good or bad foods in a moment, but it is important to understand that per gram, fats are simply more calorie dense. Fats are like this little powerhouse, which makes sense because it's the way that our body stores excess calories is fat. It's an effective way of using a smaller amount of space to store more energy. And the biggest reason that high-fat diets, which we have right now in our society, are more associated with weight gain is simply because high-fat foods have more calories. 1 gram of carbohydrates or protein is 4 calories, whereas 1 gram of fat is 9 calories. So the more fat you have in your diet, the more calories will come with that as well if you were to compare that to something like a high-carbohydrate diet. If you remember, 1 pound of oil has 4,000 calories and 1 pound of broccoli is about 100 to 120 calories. So the one tablespoon of oil that you saute your broccoli in, your head of broccoli, can have more calories than the entire head of broccoli itself. But the oil's not going to add any fullness to your meal. It's not going to make you feel more full because your stomach is not going to register that. Like, don't believe this idea that it's just going to magically be more satiating when there's no extra filling power to that. You can double the amount of calories in the meal simply by adding oil to that. Think about something like a baked potato. A baked potato on its own, a naked boiled potato or a naked baked potato without oil, 100 to 200 calories. Maybe slightly more if it's a really, really huge potato. You start to add cheese, sour cream, or you put some oil on it as you're baking it. Suddenly, that is an 800, 900 calorie meal or snack, in the case of French fries, where there's no extra fullness associated with eating that. It's just calories because they're high fat, high calorie density foods that are added to something that was originally pretty darn low. So what I want to stress to you is that excess calories are what cause fat gain. It's not because of eating more fat or eating carbs or anything like that, but it's much easier to eat excess calories from fat than it is from carbohydrates, especially whole plant carbohydrates. There's a big difference between something like cake or something like bread than it is to something like a potato. But it's just easier to overeat on calories from high-fat foods because they inherently have more calories to them. And even something like a donut, which people typically think of as sugar or as a high-carb food, most of the calories from something like a donut or a cake or a pizza or any other number of foods that we typically call a high-carb food are actually mostly fat. Where does pizza get most of its calories? It's not the bread, it's the pepperoni, it's the cheese. Where does a donut get most of its calories? Yeah, there's a lot coming from sugar, but most of them are actually coming from the oil that it's deep fried in. If you were to go to an ice cream parlor and you were to look at a sorbet versus a creamy based ice cream, even if there's the same amount of sugar or more sugar in the sorbet, then the ice cream is going to be much, much higher in calories because it has a higher fat source. There's more fat in that, therefore the calories go way up. So yeah, sugar, not an amazing thing. Why? Because it's had the fiber and the water removed. I'm not saying eat sugar. Like, this is the opposite of what I'm saying. But oil is exactly the same. I always think about this, that oil is to fat what sugar is to carbohydrates. What is sugar? It is a crystalline product where you start with beets. A lot of people didn't know this. You've got these white beets there. And then you take out the fiber, you process them down, you take out the water, and you're left with this tiny little syrup, which then you dry to take out even more of the water, and then you're left with crystalline sugar. You start with something that is 20 pounds to get a cup. You can't eat 20 pounds of beets. But you can eat a cup of sugar very, very easily. But you're eating all of that food without the things that made it lower in calories. Same with oil. You start with something like olives. You start with something like avocado, nuts, and seeds. They're already pretty high in calories because it's coming from fat, which is double the calories of carbohydrates, double the calories of the beets. Then you remove the fiber and the water, in the case of oil, and you're left with a refined product which now doesn't have anything to dilute it. It's pure fat, which means that it is the highest calorie food that you possibly can have. So one of the biggest things that was helpful for me and has been helpful for our members inside of Lean of Plants and just in general is to stop cooking with oil. You don't need it. It's not a health food. You can get all of the benefits from a whole food version like avocado, like small amounts of nuts and seeds. You do not need oil in your diet. What happens when you cut it out is that you will lower your calories extremely easily. The third thing that we need to understand of this, and that relates to calorie density as well, is that portion sizes don't mean much compared to what you eat. And you've probably already started to understand this through understanding how calorie density works. So if oil is 4,000 calories per pound and it's 40 times more calorie dense than non-starchy vegetables that are about 100 calories per pound, then you can go, well, the amount that I actually eat is not really going to affect this all that much. It's more about what I eat. And you're probably going, well, Charles, you're talking about oil all the time, and I've never eaten a pound of oil. But you have sauteed things in oil. You have put oil on your vegetables to roast them. When you do that, you're adding extra calories, sometimes more than what you were cooking to begin with, for no extra bigness in your meal. Bigness is a horrible word to use. But your portion size still stays the same. So you can have a really small portion of something, or you can have a really big portion of something, and it doesn't really change, unless it's exactly the same food. You can't really guarantee that the smaller portion is much lower in calories. In fact, the opposite is true. If you have a crunchy bar, or you have a Mars bar, or some kind of chocolate bar on a plate, the amount of calories in that is probably like 400, 300 calories. If you were to slice up some apples, you could fill an entire plate with apples for the same amount of calories. And why this matters so much is that you could be eating very small amounts. You could be cutting your portions of high calorie foods, but because they're so high in calorie density, you can't lose weight, or you can even gain weight. And we can quite often think, well, I'm not really eating any processed foods, or I don't eat much, or I eat like a bird, or I really watch my portions and still not lose weight. And it's because the food on your plate is just inherently calorie rich, even if it doesn't look like there's much. Come back to that coin analogy. We're thinking about this in the same way that a child would, where we go, oh, there's lots of money there because there's lots of food. Lots of food on a plate does not mean lots of calories, it just means lots of bulk. If you have a plate that is full of potatoes and broccoli and lettuce, you can have an insane amount of food, and you can have someone sitting next to you who is eating a piece of toast with some spread on it, and the person eating this insane volume of food is actually eating less calories. Think about this scenario. You have this exact scenario, and I have had this very, like, a ton of times. And then people who are eating the toast, or they're eating the toast with a few eggs on it, will look at my huge portion of food and they will say, I wish I could eat like you and be skinny like you. And I'm thinking, your tiny amount of food, your teeny tiny little bit of food has more calories than the thing that you think is, like, it's lucky for me to be eating the way that I am. The amount of food that you see is not the full picture. What matters is the calories in the food, and more specifically, the calorie density. The amazing thing about using calorie density, or understanding that portion sizes are less important, is that portion sizes do really matter when it comes to fullness. If we actually want to beat some of the effects of being in a calorie deficit, which is increased hunger, and that we have feel like we're restricted in some kind of way, then we can actually eliminate, or at least reduce, a ton of cravings, a ton of desire for high calorie, high dopamine hit foods, simply by eating bigger portions that are more calorie dilute, so that we can feel full and satisfied. I'm going to talk about hunger in a minute, but we really don't want to be falling into this trap of thinking that a smaller portion is the way to lose weight, because a smaller portion almost always leads to some kind of binge. There's been a lot of studies that look at the amount of food that people eat, and we see that that is pretty consistent for an individual. If you are someone who likes to eat 4 pounds of food in a day, you will pretty much consistently eat a similar volume of food, or similar weight of food, throughout your entire life. If you're someone who likes to eat 3 pounds, or if you're someone that likes to eat 7 pounds. So if you're just simply trying to reduce that number, you're fighting in some ways a losing battle, where that's not what is going to have the most influence, first of all, but it's also something where it's not something that your body wants to do. Your body wants to feel full. It wants to feel satisfied. A lot of the fullness that we have, or a lot of the things that turn off hunger and turn off cravings, are simply us feeling volume, or having food in our stomach that pushes out the stomach lining. It's kind of like a balloon, where we want to fill that balloon. We want to have a nice, big, plump balloon that has got a ton of air in it. And we want our stomachs to feel the same, because it's going to help shut off a lot of those cravings. So portion sizes are not as important as what you eat. What matters is calorie density. Number 4 is that there are no foods that are bad. Carbs aren't bad, fat isn't bad, and certain foods aren't bad. There is no good and bad. There is no moral when it comes to foods in and of themselves. I totally believe there is morality in terms of sourcing foods. I totally believe that we can do better when it comes to the way that we get the foods to our plates. But the food on your plate is not good or bad. The Oreo isn't good or bad. The broccoli isn't good. When you are eating in a way that supports your goals, that is just eating in a way that supports your goals. That does not make you a superior moral person. It does not make you bad if you don't eat in that way. When it comes to choices about foods, we need to think about what our goals are and the scenarios that we are planning for. And what this does is it gets us out of binary thinking, because binary thinking is, it means that when you fail or when you don't hit the mark, it's a license to give up. It also means that you're constantly looking for rules. And as we've seen in the result of something like a keto diet or something like a high carb diet or a raw diet or intermittent fasting, really the rules aren't what make the diet work anyway. The thing that makes the diet work is getting into a calorie deficit. And the easiest thing, the easiest way to do that is to reduce the calorie density of your meals. So really the rules aren't going to determine your success long term. They're just rules that help you to get into a calorie deficit. So rather than seeing things as good or bad, it's, hey, what am I trying to achieve with the choices that I'm making? Even something like Twinkies and Oreos. If you were stranded on a desert island and you had the choice, or I had the choice between carrots and Twinkies and Oreos, I would choose Twinkies and Oreos every time. Why? Because my biggest thing that I'm going to be worrying about on a desert island is starvation. That is the thing that I'm wanting to avoid most. So I'm going to go for the high calorie option, because in that scenario, the high calorie option would be best. You're in an environment, and I'm in an environment, where we do not need to be fighting starvation. We need the opposite. So we need to be asking ourselves from the context, what is my goal with eating this way? And what is the thing that is going to be best or worse or better or worse in order to make those decisions? So the first thing to ask is, well, what's our goal? What is our goal here? Well, our goal is to lose weight. Our goal is to keep muscle. Our goal is to have a ton of energy. We want to hit all of our micronutrient targets, because there'd be no point in losing weight and keeping muscle if we were then to die of scurvy or to go blind from vitamin E deficiency. Like, we want to actually get the micronutrients that we need. We also want to not go hungry, and we want to enjoy what we're doing so we can do it a long time, right? And actually sustain that. So now, rather than is it okay to eat bread or is it not? Is it good to eat tofu or is it bad? We're starting to ask, hey, does a particular food fit into these parameters? We've defined what they actually look like. Losing weight, keeping muscle, ton of energy, micronutrient targets, not going hungry, and enjoy what we're doing. So there are foods that are going to be inherently more helpful to fit that goal, and there are foods that are going to be less helpful. So the most important thing when we're thinking about helpful foods is we're thinking low calorie density. So low calorie foods, vegetables, fruits, whole grains, potatoes, all of these things, inherently low in calorie density. We also want to have foods that are high in micronutrients. Fruits, vegetables, potatoes, whole grains, beans. You're probably seeing a bit of a theme here. We also want to be eating delicious foods, foods that help us to feel full. Potatoes, rice, beans, vegetables, fruits. Because if we were to be eating just delicious foods, they wouldn't fit these other categories. They wouldn't help us with micronutrients. They wouldn't help us with hunger. So, I mean, most people that I know love potatoes. If they have a license to actually eat potatoes, they're pretty darn happy about that. High satiety. This is one of the things that's really, really important and often overlooked, is that we have an index, just like we do with calorie density, of satiety. And satiety is really that feeling that you get when you are comfortably stuffed, where your hunger is massively diminished and your desire for food is massively diminished. If you think about Thanksgiving or Christmas or some kind of event where you've just eaten so much and you're so stuffed, where someone offers you your favorite dessert and you don't want it. Have you ever felt that way? I know that I have many, many times. Well, that's called satiety. And there are some foods that are higher in satiety than other foods. I mean, they shut off that desire to be eating something else. And the highest satiety food on the planet is actually potatoes. Like, this is kind of crazy. And it's actually off the charts when you compare it to other foods. Oatmeal is pretty up there. And there's a few other things that are up there. There's some non-vegan foods, so animal-based foods that are pretty high in satiety, but they're also very high in calories. So this is really important to understand as well. Low in calories, high in satiety, potatoes is the winner when it comes to this. So if you're making a decision about what's amazing for fat loss and what's not, and you're presented with a couple of options, you can now ask the question, well, hey, which is going to be better? And this allows you to take an approach where you're making an empowered decision and you're making it based on criteria that actually works. And so let me give you another little story about how this has affected me. So thinking about those salads that I used to eat. So I used to eat these really low calorie, well, actually they were super high calorie. I used to eat these very high calorie, low, but very low filling salads because I would see people eating a fully raw diet. I wanted to be fully raw because I saw people doing that and they had abs and I wanted abs, so I did it. Dumb. Not dumb, just misinformed. And so I'd make a big salad, I'd put tomato, I'd put lettuce, tons of greens, I'd put what other raw vegetables? Carrots, kale, I'd put tons of these low calorie elements in there. And I see people doing this to this day. I'd put nuts and seeds and I'd make a tahini kind of dressing and I'd put my dressing on. And so what was happening is that because I added a lot of nuts and a lot of seeds and then I made a high calorie dressing out of tahini, which is blended sesame seeds, I had a very high calorie salad. And easily a salad like what I've just described can be 800, 900, even over 1,000 calories because nuts and seeds being so high in calorie density, the calories add up very, very quickly. And so I'd have something like that. But then when you think about satiety, I didn't have anything in there that is going to be high satiety. Because vegetables, while they're low in calories, they're not actually very high in satiety. So if you were to try to attempt to just eat vegetables because they're so low in calories, you would feel really, really hungry and you would most likely end up binging or going to some higher calorie foods because you can't just eat vegetables because it's just like trying to drink water and get your stomach full of water and think that that's going to be a great way to diet. It isn't. You can't just drink more water and then like live off water. You're going to get hungry at some point. So potatoes are what help you to do that. Rice, beans, all of these foods that are slightly higher in calories than vegetables and fruit, but they have more carbohydrates in them, and that is the reason why they're so satisfying. So a meal like that, I'm hitting the fact that I've got some low calorie elements, and I'm hitting the fact that I've got some high nutrient foods, but it's high in calories and it's not going to keep me full. In fact, I'm going to eat all of those calories. And then even though I've had more than a couple of meals worth in one sitting, I'm still hungry afterwards. So it's not actually the best option for me. Contrast that if I was to make a similar salad and I was going to add in some broccoli and I was going to add in a ton of veggies because I want to have like a big volume of food. I want to have those low calorie elements in there, but I also want to feel full after that meal. So I'm going to add in 2 to 3 potatoes. And then I'm going to add in a bit of hummus in there as well for some flavor, make it taste really, really good. And I'm going to maybe thin that with a little bit of lemon juice so that it's lower in calories than an oil-based or dressing. I'm not going to add any oil here. And so now suddenly I've got a meal that hits all of the things that we're looking at. It's low in calorie density. It's got a ton of nutrients in it. It's delicious. It keeps me full. It's high satiety. And it was really just by removing a little bit of those high calorie nuts and then adding in some potatoes. So now if you are presented with those two options, you can really quite clearly answer the question, well, which is going to be better for weight loss? It's the one that has potatoes and it's the one that doesn't have all those high calorie dressings. And so this is how you make empowered decisions about weight loss. This is how you go from having to constantly following rules and then falling off when you don't hit the mark to being able to go out to eat and choose a better option, to being able to make a meal really, really quickly. at home when you have no motivation to being able to look at a recipe on Pinterest and go, hey, well, I'm just going to remove the oil from that. I'm going to saute with water and I'm going to add a ton more vegetables because it doesn't really have much. So I'm going to double all the veggies in this and I'm going to use some silken tofu, which is lower in calorie density, as opposed to as many cashews. Or I'm going to omit the cheese in that. So you can actually lower the calories of your meals really, really easily, hit all of these requirements that you have, and then start to lose weight. Like, how exciting is this? Like, I get so flippant excited by this. Foods aren't good or bad, but they do serve different purposes. Things that are going to be inherently unhelpful is high calorie density, because you're eating so many calories when you are not feeling full and satisfied from that. I mean, it would be kind of nice if we could just eat an Oreo or eat a sleeve of Oreos, and then because we'd hit all of our calories that we needed for the day, we're just not hungry and we're like, no food appeals to us. But that is simply not the case. These foods are inherently low in satiety because they don't have the volume that we need, and they also don't have the fiber and the carbohydrate-ness. I don't even know how to describe this in some ways. Foods like potatoes, rice, and beans, they have a really, really high satiety index, and we eat enough of them packaged with fiber and water so that they really do help us feel full. You don't get that same effect from foods that have had that fiber and water removed, even if you are to eat like a relatively big amount of them. And a lot of this is just simply weight. If you were to have, let's say you were to have a donut, for example, on your plate that can look very similar to something like a potato, volume-wise, it can look very similar. But if you were to actually weigh that, most of what you're seeing in the donut is air. So you're not having the weight that you need. You're having the size, but it's not going to be as filling. So weight is really, really important. Having foods that are weighty is very, very important when it comes to satiety and it comes to feeling full and not wanting to eat later on. Just as a side note for this, this is another reason that you can't just eat a ton of lettuce and think that that is going to help you feel more full, because it just doesn't have the weight to it. Lettuce and greens are amazing. Add them to your meals, but have weighty vegetables as well. Have broccoli, have carrot, have cabbage, have things that are actually going to weigh something in your stomach. Have meals that are 2 pounds. A 2 pound meal is going to be much, much more satisfying and filling than a 1 pound meal or than a half a pound meal, which would be something like a sandwich. So low satiety is unhelpful. Lacking in micronutrients, highly processed foods have less micronutrients because they are removed in the processing. The other thing that happens with a lot of these foods, especially if you refine sugar and you refine fat and then you put those two things together, they are very high dopamine hit foods. They light up our brains in a way that tells us that we want to eat more of them. Coupled with the fact that they just don't have much satiety, we're going to be overeating on them. We're going to be overeating on calories on them extremely easy. Things like chocolate, where you've got sugar and you've got fat combined. Things like donuts, exactly the same thing. Pizza, creamy curries, takeout, most of the foods that you see online or that you would go out to eat for, they all fit into this category of high dopamine hit foods because they have that amazing combination of refined fats and refined sugars, and it just lights up our brain in a crazy way. So no good and bad foods, just to recap on that, but there are going to be foods that are more helpful and there are going to be foods that are definitely less helpful. Number 5 is that weight loss doesn't equal fat loss in the short term, and the number on the scales is not a big indicator in the short term of what is actually happening inside of your body. The scale weight is the sum of who you are in totality. It is the poo that is sitting inside you ready to be dumped into the toilet. It is the food that you ate the previous day. It is the muscle that you have on your body. It is the water in your cells. It is everything. It is the fat on your body. It is the hair on your head. It is everything that makes up your physical presence. So when you hop on the scales and you see that fluctuate day to day, it is not an indication of fat and fat changing in your body. Fat is only a very small percentage. Even if you have a high body fat percentage, let's say that you are up above 30% body fat, which if you're in the overweight category is probably whereabouts you're sitting. For context, I'm at about 17% body fat right now. So if you were to think about it just from a logical standpoint and you hop on the scales day to day, you need to be thinking that the biggest influencer of what I have on my body right now is not going to be fat, because it's a very small percentage of who I actually am or what makes up who I am. Water is one of the biggest things that actually change the amount of weight that you will see on the scales day to day. So if you're having more high carbohydrate foods, you want to expect that that goes up, because carbohydrates hold on to more glycogen, and glycogen, or they create glycogen, which is basically the way that your body stores carbohydrates in the short term for you to use for fuel. And they also hold on to water. They hold on to a couple of grams of water for every gram of glycogen. So if you go from a low carb diet to a high carb diet, you would expect that you would instantly see a big jump on the scales from more water and from more glycogen stores. It is not more fat. Water weight and losing water weight fast is a multi-trillion dollar industry. It is why the keto diet has gained so much popularity over the past couple of years, because you can see such phenomenal results when you reduce carbohydrates in the short term. In the short term, if you go, hey, I'm going to cut out carbs, you can lose 10 pounds of water over the course of the week, because you're depleting your carbohydrate glycogen stores. You've got less water associated with that. Did you lose more fat? No. There's actually been studies done by proponents of the keto diet where they take people and they put them on the same amount of calories. They go, hey, we're going to put everyone on 1800 calories. We're going to measure how much fat they lose over the course of the week. Keto diet people, they lose more fat on the scales. It looks amazing. High carb people didn't lose as much weight on the scales. Look at what's happening inside of their body. The keto diet loses less fat. The high carb diet retained more muscle. So a lot of what was lost with the keto diet was, first of all, water and then some muscle, because our body's preferred source of fuel is carbohydrates. So if you're depleting carbohydrates from your diet, you do run the risk of actually burning into some of the muscle that you have, which is the opposite of what you want to do. So don't be fooled by diets where you lose weight really, really quickly and you have this idea that what you're doing is successful. It means nothing if it doesn't equate to fat loss. So how do you determine whether you're losing actual fat over time? You need to see this on a longer timeline. You need to look at this in terms of averages, because over the course of months, you should see the scales go down. You should see that number depleting because you have reduced your fat stores. But you're not going to see that necessarily on the short term. So what we recommend to people is that you take your weight daily, and then over the course of a week, you have an average. So you take all of the weights that you have for 7 days and you add them all up, and then you divide them by 7. And so then you will look at your starting weight, and you will look at the number that is divided by 7, and then that would be your average weight loss for that week. And again, that doesn't necessarily mean that all of that is fat. It really doesn't. But it does help to take into account some of the natural fluctuations that our bodies have. And if you start to daily weigh, you will see that your body does have a lot of fluctuations. Biggest point that I want to get away with this, or to really stress to you, is that simply what you see on the scales is not an accurate reflection of what is happening in your body, especially in the short term. So do not be seduced by quick results. It is very, very difficult, I would say almost impossible, to lose a large amount of fat in a short period of time. You do not lose 10 pounds of fat in a week. You do not lose 5 pounds of fat in a week. You would be ecstatic to be losing even 1 to 2 pounds of fat in a week. Anything more than that, you're kidding yourself that it's actual fat loss. What matters is whether you can continue to be in a calorie deficit for the long haul so that you can actually reach your long-term goals, not just to have some kind of quick dopamine hit, amazing metric on the scales that it means absolutely crap because you give up because it was too hard to do. Like 800 calorie diets where people do them for a couple of weeks and then they go back. You want to be thinking about this for the rest of your life. Can you conceivably do something for the rest of your life? Can you do something long enough to hit your goals and then stay there? Quick weight loss on the scales is just that. It's weight loss. It doesn't mean that it's fat loss, and it doesn't mean that it's going to get you to your goals. So that's number five. Number six is adherence is the biggest reason why most people eat more calories than they need when dieting. This is really, really important to understand. And we want to think about this in terms of just very, very simple math. Maybe you remember algebra in school. But if you're thinking about this in terms of, I think the easiest way is literally just to pull out my calculator. A lot of people, when they're dieting, will be eating very, very low calories. And when I say very low, I'm talking like 1,500 calories a day, because to me, that's really, really low. And this is where a lot of people will be saying, hey, like I diet and I eat super low calorie. Spoiler alert, you probably eat more than you think. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But they will be eating 1,500 calories a day. So if we do the math on that, you eat 1,500 calories a day times 7, so over the course of the week, so that would be 10,500 calories. But what actually happens is maybe you eat 1,500 calories, tracking or not, doesn't really matter, but you're eating in a way that you have massively reduced your calories, and you do that for 5 days. Let's say you do that for 5 days, you've got 7,500 calories. But let's say you have two days of the week where you just have a little bit of a splurge, or you end up having a binge because you've been really, really good all week, or you're just feeling really sick of it. So let's say you have 2 days that are 5,000 calories, which is very easy to do with high calorie density foods. It's not inconceivable. In fact, it's extremely easy because you can do this with a little bit of Ben & Jerry's ice cream, a couple of drinks of wine and some chips, and maybe a pizza. Like, you're already there. It's not hard to do. Eating 5,000 calories is, I would say, is on the low side of this kind of estimate. You can eat 10,000 calories in a day really, really easily. So we've got 5,000 times 2, which is already 10,000, plus 7,500. So then we got looking at actually 17,500. Divide that by 7, your actual average over the course of the week is 2,500. You're not eating 1,500 calories a day over the long haul. And so this is not just on a week-to-week basis. You can be thinking about this in terms of a month-to-month basis. You can think about this in terms of really, really good adherence to your diet for the first 3 weeks and then having a bit of a break or giving up for 3-4 days. It's very, very easy to offset the hard work that you've put in over the course of a bingey night or an emotional eating night. You have a breakup, you have maybe even something less emotional than that, you have a couple of drinks, go out for a meal, and like an average takeaway meal is like 2,000 calories just right off the bat. That is not with any drinks, that is not with any dessert. So it's very, 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 very easy to, even when you're intentional, be eating on average a lot more calories than you think. And most people are eating many, many more calories than you think. So let's try another scenario. Let's say that you were going to take a bit of a more moderate approach because you're most concerned with adherence. If adherence is the biggest reason that people eat more calories when they're dieting, then we just need to increase our adherence. We need to increase our consistency. So let's say instead of eating 1,500 calories a day, you were to eat 2,000 calories a day, which is much more doable. And like, disclaimer, I'm in a fat loss phase right now. I'm intentionally losing weight right now. I'm eating about 2,000 calories a day and I'm already lean. Like, I need less calories than most people because I'm a smaller unit than most people. I require less calories because there's less of me. I'm already pretty much at my goals. I'm just trying to reveal a little bit of the muscle that I've built over the last couple of months. So you don't need to be even eating as little as I do, unless you want to be losing weight really, really fast, which means absolutely nothing if your adherence isn't high. The hypothetical diet that you don't actually adhere to is worse than the less extreme diet that you actually do. So 2,000 calories every day, 7 days, and then we go, okay, so that's like 1,400 calories a week. That actually is 2,000 calories a day. Let's say you have like a little bit of a treat on the weekend. Let's say you add like an extra 300 calories. So we've got the 2,000 times 7. We're going to add maybe like 200 calories here for like a dessert. We're going to add another 500 calories there. We've got 14,700 divided by 7. We're looking at an average of 2,100 a day. So that's still much less than if you were to eat 1,500 calories a day and have a bit of a bingey weekend. So you can see here from a math perspective that it's really, really easy to just completely muck up everything that you're doing because your adherence isn't high and it's not consistent. So it's far better to consistently be eating a higher amount of calories that you can actually sustain, that you are able to feel full and satisfied, than it is to have these really, really low calorie periods. Like every time I see someone eat an 800 calorie diet, I know that they're not going to keep that weight off, because there's no way that you can feel full and satisfied eating 800 calories a day. Even if you were to eat so low calorie density, you just simply don't, you can't add in the things that you need to in order to feel satiated. So adherence is the number one thing that you need to focus on when it comes to dieting, once you've locked in calorie density and all these other things. Number seven, satiation is a huge part of compliance. Satiation, that feeling of fullness, is mostly influenced by volume. Our stomach actually feeling full, us actually having that the food in our stomach pushing out the walls, being in contact with the walls of our stomach, we want to feel that. We want that to be a big part of our dieting, because it's going to help with adherence, okay? You don't want to be hungry when you're dieting. You want to avoid that at all costs, because your adherence will be lower if you don't feel full and satisfied. Really important. I know this is so counterintuitive, but when we do the math on it, it works out. And I've seen how it works out so many times, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. People increase their adherence. People feel full and satisfied in their meals. They continue to lose weight, not just for the first week, but months and years later. And if you have a lot of weight to lose, it's going to take you time. You have to be adherent. Not only that, you're going to have to sustain what you're doing if you want to sustain the results. So adherence is so important. Satiation is so important. The other thing that influences is carbohydrates. Whole food carbohydrates are going to help you to feel really, really full and satisfied. Potatoes, rice, beans, whole grains. These are all things that I have eaten so much of while losing 40 pounds. Continue to this day, because they hit all of those things that we're looking for in terms of better or amazing fat loss foods. Protein doesn't really appear to make people eat less at subsequent meals in terms of calories. This is a really, really interesting one, because people always talk about protein as being more satiating. And it's true that people report that protein in a meal helps them to feel less hungry. When they actually go to subsequent meals, they don't eat any less. So they're saying that they're less hungry, but they don't eat less. So it's like you think you're less hungry, but your actual behavior says otherwise. So don't be too concerned about protein. We can get enough protein through eating beans, eating tofu, eating a lot of protein-rich plant foods. You don't have to, you're not magically going to feel more full because you add protein powder to a smoothie. There's other factors that are going to influence that far, far more. Fiber is one of the biggest parts that is going to do that. Fiber not only helps you to feel more full when you're eating food, because fiber plus water adds bulk in your stomach. It makes this kind of jelly-like substance, which allows you to feel more full, but it also helps you hours later. You eat a high fiber food in the morning, or high fiber breakfast, you're going to feel less cravings at night. If you want to know more about this, I did a whole podcast episode all about fiber. Willpower is overrated. It's a limited resource, and it means that you are going to be very prone to giving into what your old habits are. Motivation is very overrated as well. We only really have motivation to get started on something. What you really need is a plan where you need less discipline, not more. So when it comes to dieting, it's hard enough. When it comes to reducing calories, it's hard enough. We need to have less need for willpower by eating more volume, eating really satiety rich, high satiety foods, so that we are less likely to binge, a lot more fiber. If we're snacking a lot, then we probably need to be eating more at our meals. We need to be assessing the hunger that we feel in the context of how can I make my meals reduce hunger more. If you can reduce hunger, which you can, I've told you how to do that. If you can reduce hunger while you're in a dieting phase, then your adherence is going to be so much higher, and you're actually going to be able to not need as much willpower. Number eight is that exercise doesn't help you lose weight. Oof, this is a big one. And there's so much of a misconception around this. There's been so many studies that poll people, and they look at what do most people think is the biggest factor towards weight loss, and most people do think it's the gym. Most people do think that it's working out. The actual research does not support that, and here's why. Exercise, when I say exercise, I mean cardio. Cardio does not help you to lose weight because while you do burn more calories, which you would think in the context of a calorie deficit would be helpful because you start with a certain amount and now you add in cardio, you burn 200 calories or 400 calories extra, you would think, hey, well, I've created a 400 calorie deficit, right? Wrong, because exercise A burns a relatively small amount of calories. Don't believe the BS online that you can do a 1,000 calorie workout that isn't a marathon. Like, even marathon runners, it's kind of around that point. You're not running for 4 or 5 hours. You're probably doing a half an hour kind of workout. I would always get shocked when I was running and I would do an hour long run and it'll be like 300 calories. That's an hour of like quite a lot of cardio. So cardio does burn a relatively small amount of calories. You're not going to burn that by sitting in an ice bucket for a minute or two. There's this thing going around now that you can burn thousands of calories from just sitting in an ice bath. It's like, it's total BS. There's nothing that supports this. So we're burning a relatively small amount of calories as anyway through the cardio that we do. But then we also get hungrier. We get hungrier and then we eat a little bit more. Whether you think you are or not, it can be a few extra bites of something. It can be a little extra snack. So we're very easily eating more than what we think simply because we feel hungrier. It's a behavioral change from having an excess burn. The other thing is that we move less, and this is one of the biggest influences. Even if you were to control for hunger and you would control so tightly the fact that you burn 200 calories in a run and then you make sure that you don't eat 200 calories extra, which would negate the run effectively from a calorie deficit standpoint, you move less. You can't really control for that. You're going to fidget less throughout the day. You might sit on the couch a bit more. You might itch more. You might move like just a little bit less. You might gesticulate a little bit less. You can't really offset that intentionally very easily. So you can move by 2,000 or 200 calories less simply because you went and burnt 200 calories in a cardio session. And this is what happens. So suddenly the 2,000 calories that we thought were helpful for to us, or even if it was 500 calories, you go out and you run, your 500 calories, maybe your 400 calories hit hungrier. You eat those 400 calories, eat more. And then you move 200 calories less. Well, now suddenly, simply by adding in a run, you are actually gaining weight. And this happens to a lot of people. They start running or they start doing a lot of cardio and they actually gain weight and they're like, how the heck is this possible? And it's possible because of math. It's possible because our bodies have these phenomenal mechanisms to help us to conserve energy. Because if we don't conserve energy, then we're going to die. Well, that's what they think. That's what our body thinks. Our body's just not prepared for a scenario where we're getting more calories than we need. So they've got all these ways to help us to not... It doesn't know that we're not starving. So it's got all these ways to help us with getting that calorie maintenance or that kind of equilibrium, if you will, to the same point. So here's what to do instead. I'm not saying don't exercise. Exercise is really, really valuable. It's one of the most important things that you can do for your heart health. Cardio is really, really important for your heart health as well. Please do it. It is incredibly important. If you do everything with your diet, with your nutrition, if you're focused on your nutrition for fat loss, then adding in cardio is not going to jeopardize that in any way, shape, or form. It's a positive thing you can do. It is going to make you so much healthier in your life. But just don't see that as a weight loss process. See that as, I'm doing this for my heart health. I'm doing this for my mental health. Put it into the perspective that it is. Don't do it to burn extra calories because you won't. What you can do to help with the calories standpoint and the weight loss standpoint when it comes to exercise is walk. Because walking is a non-exercise activity that does increase calorie burn without appearing to add to hunger. So having a step goal is a really, really effective way to simply burn more calories and not have those effects of hunger. The second thing is to strength train. So strength training increases muscle and you burn more calories at rest because you have a higher metabolic rate when you have more muscle on your body. This is one of the most important things that you can do for your long-term and short-term health is to start strength training. And I did a fat scan recently, and over the past 5 years, so since 2019, I've gained about 5 kilos of muscle, which is pretty wild when I actually look at it. Or between like 4 and 5 kilos, so 8 to 11 pounds-ish. And my resting metabolic rate has gone up by 200 calories simply because I'm a bigger unit now and muscle needs more energy than fat does, which is kind of crazy. So strength training. Number 9 is that hormones, menopause, insulin, stress, cortisol, they don't change the fundamentals of weight loss. They still operate within the context of a calorie deficit. So even if you have PCOS, you have hormonal issues, you're menopausal, you're premenopausal, you're very short, you will still always lose weight in a calorie deficit. It doesn't matter how many diets you've done. It doesn't matter if someone said that you have broken your metabolism. It is not true. Those things can influence the amount of calories that you burn, 1000%. They can influence the amount of calories that you take in. You may need to put in more effort than someone else. But if you are in a calorie deficit, you will still lose weight. You cannot break that process. I want to propose to you something here. Imagine our military, your military, whatever. Imagine if you could break someone's metabolism, or you could get someone to a point where through conditioning, you could make them a super soldier. Imagine if you could create a robotic human that did not need fuel. Do you not think that every single military on the planet would be creating these people that somehow did not need calories to function? It's so ludicrous that we've still got this idea that we can make our bodies so flippin' efficient that we become super soldiers and robots where we don't need fuel. That no matter how low the calories that we eat, we somehow still gain weight. We somehow still maintain weight. You know what happens when people, when they consistently don't have enough calories? They starve. They die. This is what is happening to people in a lot of developing countries where they don't get enough food. This is what has happened to us throughout our entire history. We didn't get enough food and we died. Eventually, you don't get enough calories, you will die because your body runs out of fuel, it runs out of a source in which to power your body and it starts to eat away at itself. That's how starvation works. Please, if you are listening to this right now, which obviously you are, do not fall into this lie that you can somehow be so efficient and so special that a calorie deficit does not apply to you and that there are some circumstances which mean that it is going to be different for you. It may be different, but it is still only going to be in a margin of reality. It's still going to be within a realm of reality. It's not in the realm of impossibility. The other thing that is really important to understand is that efficiency is not a brokenness. Storing more calories more efficiently would actually be a positive survival of the fittest process. If you had someone in an environment where they're just simply getting not enough food, if you had two people and one person was, they didn't need as many calories as someone else, they were more efficient, that person would have a higher chance of survival than someone who they had to eat more calories in order to sustain their bodily functions. Like if you think about someone who is naturally skinny, then that, and they eat like a ton of food, they eat a ton of calories for whatever reason, they're less efficient, that would actually be a negative thing. So it's really, really important that we understand that a super efficiency, if you have a lot of efficiency in your body because you're getting older or because of many other factors, PCOS, whatever it is, that would actually be a positive thing. So we need to stop thinking about this in terms of my body is broken or that there's something wrong with me. If we had a super efficient car that burnt less fuel than another car, it wouldn't be considered broken. It would be considered amazing. Efficiently storing excess fuel is not an indication of something wrong in our bodies. It's a normal response and it is a process that is designed to keep us alive, especially in this context of not getting enough calories, which has been where humanity has operated since the beginning of time. So there are things that are going to make you more efficient as a human in order to keep you alive. All right. The first one is aging. And why? Because you're going to lose muscle. You're going to lose muscle as you age unless you massively strength train. So please go on strength train, which means that you're going to move less. So you're going to need fewer calories as a predictable response. You think about that. That's going to help keep people alive over the course of history, because as they age, they suddenly don't need as many calories. And it means that the younger people can have more of the rations. It's a predictable response, okay? It's a survival mechanism. Stress and high cortisol. Some of the biggest reasons that people gain weight when stressed is that cortisol and having this feeling of stress, it makes us want to behave in a way where we eat more calories. It makes us hungrier. We stress eat, we want more dopamine, all of these things. It influences, it's a physiological response to a hormone, but it causes a behavioral response that is a predictably creates more calories. It's not that we have more stress and then we suddenly have the same amount of calories and then magically we use them differently. Most of what happens when we have high cortisol is that we have a behavioral change that predictably results in us eating more calories, possibly moving less as well. Hormones. People talk a lot about hormones as a reason that they can't lose weight. It's one of the things that I really struggle with the most when we're in conversations, because we need to define what hormones actually means. And most of the time people will talk about hormones and they won't define it. You're going to see this absolutely everywhere on the internet where someone says, if you're in perimenopause or you're postmenopausal or you've got this hormonal issue, you need to balance your hormones in order to lose weight. And they won't define what that means. And there's intentionality in that, because if you don't define something, then it's mystical and magical. Because I can come to you and say, hey, you need to balance your hormones, buy my tea. Hey, you need to balance your hormones, eat my specific way of eating. That's going to get you into a calorie deficit. That's all it's going to do. It's a marketing tactic. It's a ploy. And yes, there are things that happen in our bodies. There are hormones that influence our behavior, our hunger levels, how we burn calories, our movement, our muscle mass, but they operate still within the context of a calorie deficit. Like, even if we were to, like, we have to define. First of all, if you're going to say, hey, it's my hormones or butt hormones, everything in our body is controlled by hormones. All a hormone is a chemical reaction in one area of your body that controls something happening in another. It's a key turning in one area that opens a door in another. That's all hormones are in the most simplified way. So even if we were going to look at something like menopause, menopause is a phenomenal example. Hormones changing as we age. What happens? What's the actual thing? Let's get this a whole lot more clear than just saying, oh, my hormones, my menopause hormones, poor me. I'm sorry. Like, here's the thing. It's like, I know that there are physical things that happen. Let's talk about them though. Let's actually address them with clarity rather than clout. So what happens during menopause? One of the things that happens is that we have progesterone and estrogen decrease. What that does is it leads to some metabolic changes that result in us having less muscle mass. So we've got a couple of things here. We're aging, so we're typically moving less. Like, this is just something that happens, okay? And then we've got less muscle mass as well. So less muscle mass means that we need fewer calories. So what was calorie maintenance for you? Let's say that you change absolutely nothing. You start to enter this menopausal area and now you need less calories. Not because anything in your diet has changed, simply because you have less muscle mass on your body. And so now you're going from calorie maintenance where you're not going to be gaining because there's this kind of equilibrium of calories coming in and calories coming out, to actually being in a surplus because you're burning fewer calories than you have in the past. So you lose muscle tone and you lose it typically around your stomach, and it's going to be replaced by fat. This is where that menopause belly comes in. It's not a magical phenomenon. Like, yeah, it sucks, but it is a predictable response to the way that our bodies change with age and with fluctuations. It's not like millions of calories. It's hundreds of calories. Over the course of a lifetime, from 20 to age 70, we reduce the amount of calories that we need by 700 calories. It sounds like a lot of calories, but that's like a bite of pizza. No, it's not a bite of pizza. It's a slice of pizza. It's a couple of slices of pizza. When it comes to high calorie foods, we can control for that. We can figure out 700 calories, and that's from 20 to 70. The thing is that weight gain is typically, especially around this area, weight gain is typically the result of death by 1,000 cuts. We have a slight calorie surplus over a long period of time. Most people are typically gaining 2, 3, 4, possibly even 5 pounds a year. It's not huge weight gain in a short period of time. It's the creep that happens because we're losing muscle, we're moving less. It's a predictable response to a, an environment, an internal environment that is changing and an external environment that provides too many calories. So this brings me to point number two, or to number 10. You are not broken. You can still lose weight. You just maybe need less calories than someone else. You don't become a super soldier because you hit 45. Imagine like the army. Imagine like this elite task force, and it was all like women in their 50s because they just somehow just really didn't need any food anymore. Or it was all of us that had been dieting, and I'm doing air quotes here, broke their metabolism for 10 years, we'd all be the super soldiers because we'd be the robots that didn't need fuel. We'd be essentially the Blade Runner people. But I still think they need fuel. Like, that's the thing. Like, you look at any sci-fi movie, they still need fuel. Anyway, so the weight gain that we see as a society directly related to calories produced by the food industry. Most people are eating way more calories than they think they are, and they're moving less. So statistically, when we look at how many calories somebody actually needs, there's only 12% of people would need to eat less than 1,400 calories per day to be in a 25% deficit. Less than 12% of people, and it drops off sharply after this. So what that means is that most people, 90% of people, would be able to eat at least 1,750 calories per day to maintain their weight. They're not losing at that point, but they are maintaining. So if you think that you're the exception where somehow you are only going to need 1,000 calories a day, it's just not actually accurate. What's most likely happening is that you're eating more calories than you think you are. And there's been many, many, many studies that look at this, where they will get dietitians, they will get people to count calories, they will get people to weigh and measure food, and they will ask people, well, how many calories are you actually eating? Even with all of the tracking that you can do, most people are overestimating the amount of calories or underestimating the amount of calories they eat by like 1,000. Like, it's kind of wild. People that think that they're eating 1,500 calories a day, most of the time you're not. And if you think about adherence, it's not just what you're eating on a day-to-day basis. It's not just what you're eating on a good day. It's what you're eating on a bad day. It's what you're eating in late night binge. It's what you're drinking. It's what sources you're adding to your meals. It's very hard in this current environment to be eating less than 2,000 calories a day. Like, it's a very, very conscious effort, and it's a very conscious reduction of high calorie foods consistently in order to do that. And like I said, I've been on this journey for a very, very long period of time. I don't need as many calories as someone else because I'm a smaller unit. This is one of the biggest influences. The biggest actual influencer of how many calories you need is going to be your size. So if you have 100 pounds to lose, if you have 50 pounds to lose, like you need more calories. You can lose weight in eating more calories than someone who only has 10 pounds to lose, even if you are older. Age influences things, but not as much as size. It's like a little tiny efficient car, a little Nissan Leaf, versus a big Dodge Charger, whatever. I don't really know cars. Bigger car needs more fuel. Small car, typically more efficient. So don't, again, fall into this trap of thinking that you're somehow this exception to the rule of where people sit in terms of actual calorie needs. There's normal fluctuations within a range. And the thing that helped me to understand this most was thinking about that even within height variations of people, we have quite a lot of height variation, but it's within a range of normality. So you may have someone who is 5 foot tall, fully grown 5 foot tall, or you may have someone who is even smaller than this, but you don't have someone who's 3 foot tall. You may have someone who is like 5 foot nine. You may have someone who's 6 foot. You may have someone who's like 6 foot and a half. We consider that extremely tall, but we don't see people who are 8 foot, 9 foot, 10 foot, or 20 foot. Like, we don't see that. So we have almost like this, and it is actually, it's a bell curve where you have most of the people sitting in this very tight range of normality, and then it gets this sharp drop off towards the edges, and then there's a point at which is just simply impossible. You don't have a 20 foot person, but you'll have a very, very small percentage of people who are 6'5". You don't have a 3 foot person, but you'll have a very, very small percentage of people who are 5 foot. And then after that, it's just dropping off even steeper. And there's no one who's like 3 foot or 1 foot. It just simply does not happen. Maybe there's like one person, I don't know. It's the same thing for calories. So you're not the exception to the rule where somehow you are the one person that needs 800 calories, because that's out of the bell curve. Maybe you need to eat 1700 calories to maintain your weight. Like, that's conceivable. That's on the very, very lower end. Extremely sharp drop off. Maybe you're like really, really tiny. You're a petite little granny and you're in bed all day and you don't move, so you burn hardly any calories. You'd still be burning like 1500 calories a day. Just as a base. One of the things that helped me most, like, I can talk about the science of this all day, but you're not special. I'm not special. I thought I was broken for a long time. It held me back so much because I thought that I would see people online eating foods that I eat today, eating with a ton of freedom in their diet, and I would not understand how they were as skinny as they were. And I really, truly believed that my metabolism was broken, that something was wrong with me. And it took me understanding all this and seeing the change in my own life to realize that that was a lie that I bought into, that I had been sold as a marketing ploy. And I had believed it because I hadn't seen actual real results. And I can tell you here and now that idea that there is something special about you and your metabolism that makes it harder to lose weight, be it true or not, it's still within a range of possibility and very, very doable to achieve, providing you implement the things that I've talked about today. And you are not the special super soldier where that is impossible. You do not have to eat 800 calories a day to lose weight. You do not have to eat 1200 calories a day to lose weight. You do not even have to eat 1300 calories a day to lose weight. You just need to increase the amount of satiety that you have, decrease your calories from your starting point, get into a calorie deficit, and do that long enough to really actually see long-term changes happen on the scales. And these are the 10 things that you need to know. And if you follow these, then you will predictably lose weight. And I'm not going to go into much detail about how to actually put these practically into practice, because I have a whole mini course that teaches you exactly how to do that, which I'm going to link. And that has a very helpful visuals and how to build weight loss plates and how to use calorie density and all these kind of things. But on a fundamental level, my hope is that you can walk away from this and you can see every diet that you've ever done in the context of these 10 things. And that it's hopeful. I hope that this is really just helping you to understand that weight loss isn't magical. It's not mystical. You're not special. You just need to eat less calories. And there's a lot of ways that you can do that. So I'm going to leave it here. And if you want personal help, then we do that inside of our program. We have a one-on-one coaching program where we help women to know exactly what to do to lose weight and then give them the accountability to follow through on that so that we can actually really guarantee that you hit your goals. So if that's something that you are interested in, then you can see a link that has a bit more information about that. I'm going to leave it here. It's a long one. We covered a lot of ground, and I will see you next week in another episode. And as always, if you like this, then please consider giving me a review on Apple Podcasts. It really, really helps to get the podcast out more. And I read every single one. I appreciate every single one. And I appreciate you being here listening to such a long episode. All right, that's it. Bye.